I'd like to get started. So this second lecture in embryology is going to continue on from where we left off in the first lecture, and I'll try and overlap the content a little bit just to remind you where we're up to. What I intend to try and get through today is to try and cover those weeks 3 to 8 and give you indications of the types of events that are occurring at different stages in embryonic development. I'll remind you that historically we divide that first 8 weeks up into these 23 different Carnegie stages, so-called after the Carnegie Institute in America, which had a major role to play in early embryological studies in humans. And these early classifications are based upon changes in appearance of the external nature of the embryo during these 8 weeks. So it wasn't so much about looking in detail at the internal changes, but looking for new features that appeared, changes in the dimensions of the embryo. And I remind you that by the end of the 8 weeks, we've reached this approximately 3 centimetre in size embryo, which externally appears to have all of the musculoskeletal and sensory elements that we know and recognise on our own body. But I remind you that many of these systems are still very much underdeveloped, and I'll talk about some of those that continue to develop through the fetal period. So I remind you, in that third week of development, I just stepped on my own thing, that I was talking mainly about the way in which the mesoderm segmented in the last lecture. And what we see when we look on the dorsal side, I'm going to open that in a new tab, isn't it? Sorry. Do this then. What we see when we look on the dorsal side of the embryo at this stage is this central portion here, which I'm going to talk about today, the neural plate area, which is beginning to fold. But these features here, either side of the notochord in the midline in the mesoderm, are the somites, little balls of mesoderm running down the length of the embryo. I told you that they get added in sequence, so they start at this cranial end here, and we add them in pairs down the length of the embryo until we end up with 40 or more pairs of somites down the length. These are regularly added, and we segment this unsegmented mesoderm into these epithelial balls initially. In the head region, the mesoderm in that area remains unsegmented, and the head is a unique structure in the way in which it develops embryologically. It has many other contributions to connective tissue, including neural crest. And so we need to always consider the head quite different from the body in terms of its development. I keep talking about this segmentation because this is establishing the segmented body plan that I have here. The axial skeleton in its vertebral and intervertebral elements are laid out in pattern-wise by this segmentation of the somites. A little bit later, in the same stage, we can now quite clearly see these mesodermal elements running down the length, and now the neural plate has changed its conformation and begun to close up into a groove and then finally a tube. Notice that the neural plate is quite large in the cranial area, and this reflects the large brain plate region which is developing from week 3 onwards. So I remind you the stages of this, and we will do it in the lab as well. In terms of the organisation of the mesoderm, if you think of it as a flat plate and you start at the edge of the plate, we start with the lateral plate mesoderm right at the very outside, a strip of mesoderm inside of that, which we call the intermediate mesoderm, and then our somites, which lie beside the notochord, are this originally unsegmented paraaxial mesoderm. Paraaxial because it lies beside the axial mesoderm. So let's start with the central portion of it, and that's the axial mesoderm, better known to you as the notochord. The notochord has two key roles to play in the early development of our flat disc. The first is that it's a solid column of cells running in the rostrochordal plane of the embryo. And I guess you can try and imagine that if you had a solid column of cells like this in a very floppy disc of cells, then this rigid rod that runs down the midline of the embryonic disc provides a backbone structure on which the disc folds ventrally. So left and right portions of the flat disc will fold like this. Similarly, above the notochord, where the brain plate is growing, it will fold ventrally as well. And below the notochord, at this end, at the connecting stalk, it will also fold ventrally. So it's giving a mechanical shape to our flat disc as it folds up. So that's the first feature that's been identified for the role of the early notochord. It's not its only major role, though. Its second major role is that it is a signaller of pattern. It's not a structure which exists in you. I can't find one of these bits of stick running down your back. But what it does do is it secretes a protein growth factor. It's called sonic hedgehog, for those of you who are interested. It's not part of your exam. But this protein is secreted from the notochord. And if you're right next to the notochord, you receive that signal in a very high concentration. If you're further away from the notochord, you don't get to see as much of sonic as you'd like to. And so it's a much lower concentration, and it tells you where you are with respect to the notochord, and therefore establishes pattern within the ectoderm above it, the mesoderm beside it, and the endoderm that's lying underneath it. So it's patterning all of the tissues around it. Really important role in early development. For those of you that are wondering where this interesting feature goes to, it has actually a temporary structure which is only present in the early embryo. It actually gets incorporated into the nucleus pulposus of the intervertebral discs. So it's part of that structure. If you look inside the vertebra, you'll see a tiny little spot in the middle of the vertebral body where it used to lie. It actually has no adult equivalent. So that's the notochord, quite important for those two key features that it plays. Now the paraaxial mesoderm that lies either side of it, as I said, runs all the way up to near our buccopharyngeal membrane and all the way down to near our cloacal membrane where the connecting stalk is. And I often use this flat stage 7 because it's a nice way of representing what the embryo looks like before it folds up. So what we see is a series of segmentation events that continue along the length of it, and this will contribute to many different structures within the embryo, which I'll give you a bit more detail about a bit further down. The portion or the strip lying outside of the paraaxial mesoderm is intermediate mesoderm, and it gets its name for nothing more clever than lying between the paraaxial mesoderm and the lateral plate. It's intermediate between the two. This strip of mesoderm, which runs the length of our embryonic disc, is quite important in the development of the kidneys. And the kidneys form within us as three separate sets of kidneys through development. So the ones we end up with are our third attempt at making a type of kidney. The sequence of development of the kidney starts up here. Probably if I still had them, they'd be up somewhere in my neck region just here, within the intermediate mesoderm. And the first kidney that's formed is called a pronephros. It forms very early on and is lost very rapidly as well. What occurs, though, is that a duct forms in that region and begins to elongate within the intermediate mesoderm, and it elongates down the length of the intermediate mesoderm towards the cloacal membrane. Once those first kidneys form and are lost, then a next set begins to form beneath them within that same strip, and we call this second set the mesonephros, or middle kidney. Nephros being the nephron is the basic structure of the kidney. This middle stage in development exists for quite some time, mostly through embryonic development. So we see an intermediate stage of kidney development running right down the length of the embryo. They form huge structures. You can see them as surface bulges on the embryo at this middle embryonic time. But just like the pronephros, they're transient structures and are also lost. The true kidney that we end up with in the adult, the one that you can see in the anatomy classes, is the structure which forms called the metanephros. The metanephros form in the very caudal end of that strip, last, and they form by a complex interaction with other outgrowths from the tracts which are formed the duct system of our urinary system. We're not going to go through the details of kidney development in today's class. What I want you to understand is the sequence of events that we need to establish through embryonic times before we end up with an adult kidney. Just as an aside, these three stages of kidney development also reflect the different types of kidneys we see in different species. So fish, for example, have a very simple kidney called developing from the pronephros. They live in water. It's easy to equilibrate their liquids so they don't have too much trouble. Birds and reptiles tend to have this intermediate stage kidney here, the mesonephros, and mammals have these metanephric kidneys for living on terrestrial life. Outside here, we have this lateral plate. So here's the lateral plate, extending all the way around the outside. Think of it like a big donut in the mesoderm. And the only way in which the donut is broken is by one end of the plate is connected by the connecting stalker region here. So it disrupts the lateral plate at that site where it's connected to the forming placental region in the chorion. So it's often described as sort of a horseshoe shape, although it is a donut. And in this lateral plate area here, we get another event occurring. And I'd like you to think of it originally as a solid mesodermal structure, so there are many layers to it. And then in the middle of this flat plate on the edge of the disc, a cavity begins to form within it. So we see small spaces form right the way round the lateral plate, and these small plate spaces grow in size until they all eventually fuse together. So we end up with a horseshoe shape space running around the edge of the disc, broken down here by the connecting stalk, and it's divided the lateral plate mesoderm into two halves. One half up here is going to be close to the ectoderm. The other half down here is going to be close to the endoderm. So now we've got two connective tissue layers that are going to have different functions in terms of the development. The lateral plate mesoderm makes lots of contributions to the developing embryo. In the adult, we see it making many of the body connective tissues. It contributes within the gastrointestinal tract, all of the layers besides the epithelium. So all of the connective tissue layers, all of the smooth muscle layers, all come from that splanchnic mesoderm that surrounds the inside here. We also see it contributing the heart in this region which lies above the buccopharyngeal membrane. There are two names we give the mesoderm when it divides. The portion that's closest to the ectoderm we call somatic mesoderm. And the portion closest to the endoderm we call splanchnic mesoderm. And the splanchnic mesoderm is going to make all of those gut things I was talking about in the heart, and the somatic is going to make all of those body connective tissues. A trick for beginners is that students often, even with the best intentions, mix these terms up. Somatic comes from the lateral plate. Somitic is the paraaxial mesoderm which segments. An A and an I, a couple of vowels apart, but you'll still get zero if you use one for the other. So somatic from the edge here. If we look at a cross-section now when we fold up our embryo, it doesn't look like a flat disc anymore. It's got these features that I showed you towards the end of the first lecture, and that is here are our somites, mesoderm. Balls of mesoderm formed here. Lying between them, ventrally, is our notochord, a solid column of cells here, running on the rostrochordal axis. And above it, our neural plate is now folded up into a neural tube. Overlying all of this is our thin ectodermal epithelium, forming the surface ectoderm of the embryo. Notice at this stage in development that there is no underlying connective tissue layers. We don't have a dermis, we don't have a hypodermis. It's a very simple epithelium that encloses our embryo. The other feature I might point out to you at this stage is where our lateral plate is. It's down here and running down here as well. And this cavity here is our gastrointestinal tract. This is our endoderm lying ventrally. So you can see now how the notochord has a central position within the embryo in terms of patterning the surrounding structures. Everything close in here receives this signal and tells it where it is. Our splanchnic mesoderm will wrap around this and form our gut tube. So what about the somites themselves? Well, the somites, like the notochord, are a transient structure. We don't have somites in us anymore. They form during embryonic development and disperse. They're broken up. So even though they epithelialize initially, they break that down and separate. And I've tried to indicate here in this cartoon exactly the sequence of events that occur during somite development. So from unsegmented paraxial mesoderm, it balls up to form a ball of somite. A very young somite, when it first epithelializes, has a cavity within it called a somatocele. But as it develops, it becomes solid. It then receives signals from surrounding tissues, in particular the notochord, which tells this ventromedial portion here that these cells in this region are going to contribute to the sclerotome. The sclerotome will make our vertebral bodies and intervertebral discs. It'll make the axial skeleton. Because they appear in pairs either side of the notochord, sclerotomes from the same somite on either side contribute the left and right portions of this vertebral column. They come together and wrap themselves around the notochord. So the sclerotome forms around it from left and right with the notochord in the middle of it. When these break out from the somite and engulf the notochord, then we have then a central pattern running down the length of the embryo, not of pairs, but of a central region of the sclerotome. And then there's one more trick that embryology has to play with you just to confuse you, and that is that when we segment those sclerotomal levels, we shift the register by half a somite. So there's a shift in registration when you make a vertebral body and intervertebral disc, so every segment will form half of each. Once again, that's as much detail as I'd expect you to know about that segmentation plan. So we've formed the vertebral and intervertebral... What? You're crazy. No. We get a segmented body plan from that. On the dorsal side, around here, this region here of the somite, the dorsal side of the somite, furthest away from the notochord, it forms initially a band of cells which we call the dermomyotome. This is nice and easy for you because it tells you what it's going to form. The dermo portion is going to form the dermis. The myotome is going to form the skeletal muscle structures. So initially a single feature, C-shaped structure laterally, and then it divides into two components. The dorsal component here is the dermatome. So we've got all of the dermatome running around the dorsal side here, and that's the first side of where we get the dermis deposited within the embryo. So we get a thickened dermal ring running around the dorsal side of the embryo, and that's the first site of where the underlying connective tissue layers of the skin form. From this ring-like structure, it will spread out underneath the ectoderm ventrally and eventually will lie directly underneath all of the surface ectoderm. So it begins dorsally and spreads out underneath the surface ectoderm till eventually you've got the dermis and hypodermal layers underneath the skin of the body. So we've dealt with these two parts of the somite. We're left with one more part here, which is the myotome. And the myotome is going to divide into two components. The dorsal portion here, muscle cells which are going to go around the back here of the neural tube. The ventral portion are going to run ventrally in the body. These two halves describe the two major anatomical muscle groups which we see in the body. The muscles that move the vertebra around the back on the dorsal side, the apaxial muscles. And what I used to have, the three muscle layers around the front side here, which control the body wall, the hypaxial muscles around the ventral side. So we've got two separate muscle groups which come from this myotomal region. And one more specialization for you from the myotome is that in the segmental levels, C3 to C5, that correspond to the upper limb, innervation, and the lower lumbar region, which corresponds to the lower limb, myotome from those segmental levels will also migrate into the limb bud to form the muscles of the limb. So skeletal muscles of the limb also from those somite myotomes. So I've already shown you this movie here where the mesoderm spreads out in terms of the spreading of the myotome here. We can see the hypaxial muscles coming out of this ventral portion here, forming the three layers of the body wall. And dorsally, the apaxial muscles, which will lie behind the vertebra and control the vertebral column. The sclerotome forms a vertebral body in front of the neural tube. So just like your spinal cord lies behind the vertebral body. And much later in development, from this vertebral body, we get the vertebral arch enclosing the spinal cord. For most of development, in fact nearly all of it, the vertebral arch remains open dorsally, connected by a ligament. And the reason for doing this is that your spinal cord needs to grow substantially from this early embryonic structure. And if you enclosed it in the early cartilaginous enclosure of the vertebral column, it would not have the space to expand. So that ligament on the dorsal side allows the arch to grow as the spinal cord grows within it. So this brings us to week four. And as I mentioned in week four, the heart is our first organ to form. It forms in this region here, in the splanchnic mesoderm that lies above the buccopharyngeal membrane. It's sometimes described in the textbooks as the cardiogenic region. It's also described as the precordal splanchnic mesoderm. All you need to know is that it comes from this region up here and forms initially as a simple tube. A U-shaped tube. So when the embryo looks like this, it's a simple tube on the ventral side, and we can see here where we've broken away the wall of the pericardial cavity, and this is where the tube would lie in a U-shape at the top of the embryo. Now, over the next couple of days during week four and onwards, this tube elongates. Now, I'd like you to imagine that you've got a tube which has got a fixed top bit and a fixed bottom bit, and as it grows in length, it buckles. And so it goes from a U-shaped tube, which is wrapped around there and bent forward, it buckles as it grows and forms this S-shape. So you can best see it here in this next view, where we've got the heart, the pericardial space has been ripped away here, and you can see the heart now is buckled to form this shape, S-shaped tube, which lies in the ventral body wall. So it's going around like this. It's still not a four-chambered structure, but it still, even at this early tubular stage, can spontaneously contract. So we can see contraction of cardiac muscle, requires no innovation to contract, and will contract spontaneously, I hope, for many years to come. So if we turn this around and look at it ventrally, you can see the heart here, and you can also see that the heart occupies the vast majority of the ventral surface of the embryo. It forms a huge bulge around the front. There isn't much else beneath that. It's a big space where the gut will form, but lying directly underneath it is a special region which is where the liver forms. It's one of the next organs to develop within our embryo, in this region directly underneath the heart. So we've seen the heart form in the mesoderm. We've also got to establish, of course, a vasculature. And what I can show you here in this example from the mouse is that if you look within the mesoderm of the mouse, you can see that everything you see in gold here are blood vessels. So throughout the entire mesoderm, we have angiogenesis occurring, conversion of the mesoderm into blood vessels or vascular spaces. Spread throughout the entire mesoderm, in the head region, down the length of the embryo, and most of it is this vascular channel. So that's the mesoderm. Let's now look at the top layer, the ectoderm, and what's going to happen here. And we've talked about the neural plate forming in this blue region. Here's our primitive streak and the node. This is the buccopharyngeal membrane. This is the cloacal membrane. Notice as the disc grows that that primitive streak becomes an almost insignificant vestige down the tail end of our embryonic disc. So there are always changing relative sizes of structures. So this midline ectodermal structure is the neural plate. It's narrow at the caudal end, and this region down here will form the spinal cord. It's extended at the cranial end, and this large area here will form the brain. So all of the central nervous system from the neural plate. It folds in the middle, directly above the notochord, forming the neural groove, and these two edges will be brought together as it folds to fuse together dorsally to form the neural tube. When the groove fuses to form the tube, and it folds in like this, it separates from the surface, and we're left with just the skin ectoderm overlying the tube. So at the point at which fusion of the tube occurs, we separate the neural plate from the surface, and therefore my spinal cord's inside my body and not on the surface. I mentioned to you already in the previous lecture that this is one of the other sources of one of the abnormalities that we see in development. If we get failure of fusion of the neural tube, we get so-called neural tube defects. And where medicine's made a huge step forward in our discoveries is that we know that folate, folic acid, has an important role to play in neural tube closure. So we supplement mothers in the early stages in pregnancy with about 4 milligrams per day of folate in order to aid this neural tube closure. And since that's occurred in first world countries around the world, we've had a vast decrease in the total number of neural tube defects that are occurring. I'm talking about spina bifida and anencephaly, these failure of the neural tube to close. One other feature I'll draw your attention to. At the very edge of the plate, on the lateral side all the way around here and down here, as our waves of neural plate come together, on the crest of the waves is our neural crest. So the plate folding up to form a groove has two waves coming together. The cells at the edge of the plate are the neural crest population. They don't get integrated into the neural tube. They remain as part of the neural population on the dorsal side of the tube and are also separated from the overlying ectoderm. This is the neural crest. And as I said, they form the peripheral nervous system and lots of other structures throughout the embryo. So here's the neural crest, the edge of the plate. When it fuses together, we have a streak of neural crests running down the length of the embryo. And these neural crest cells are pretty adventurous. They're 18, they want to get out and see the world. They start to move from their location dorsally and they migrate around the edges of the neural tube. Some of them are stay-at-home types. They want to stay with their parents till they're 30. You know, it's quite good there, you get the washing done. And this population that stays around the back and doesn't go anywhere, they remain as our dorsal root ganglia, the sensory ganglia associated with the spinal cord on the dorsal side. The somites are here either side of the neural tube. So some of the neural crest duck down here between the neural tube and the somites. And other guys say, no, I'd much prefer to go a different route. And they go around the outside of the somites. So we have two pathways of migration, some going over the surface, some going between the somites and the neural tube. Once they've divided up like that, they're off to different places and different functions. The neural crest that's come down here around the neural tube inside the somites, some of them come down here and decide this looks like a nice place to live, stay there, and those cells that lie in front of the neural tube will form the sympathetic and parasympathetic chain ganglia that in the adult lie on the ventral surface of the central nervous system spinal cord. Other neural crests which have come along for the ride this far say no, they've got much more interest in seeing the world, and they continue to migrate ventrally. They move further forward, and these neural crests that continue to migrate out of this ventral region will come and populate the wall of the gut and form the entire enteric nervous system of the gut. The bit that after breakfast allows a little bit of contraction and drop the kids off at the pool in the morning, that peristaltic action that moves stuff through the gastrointestinal tract. The neural crest, therefore, if it doesn't migrate to these locations, leads to lots of abnormalities, which you'll hear about later in your course. The neural crest will also contribute to many other sensory structures in the head, so for the senses, and will also contribute to the adrenal medulla. So it has an endocrine, neuroendocrine role as well. So I've listed some of the features that are formed from neural crest here. What else is happening in the fourth week? And this is a ventral shot of the embryo. It's folded up. Let me show you a few features that are present here. This is a stage 14 at day 32. Here's the heart. Here's our liver forming directly underneath it. And in the head region, all of this structure around here is just our brain. No head, no face. It's just the brain that's closed up to form the neural tube in the head region. It's continuing to expand. It's probably one of the most rapidly proliferating regions. And all it's doing is, in essence, growing in volume. It's a big fluid-filled tube. On the surface of this brain, wrapped around here, is three bands of tissue running around the ventral side here that we can see. The large ones, the first, the second, the third, and a tiny little fourth one here. I'd like you to imagine that these look like the face mask of a gridiron helmet. They're wrapped around the front region here. Bands of tissues. These are pharyngeal arches. In cycle B, we talk much more about how the face develops, but at this stage, I'd like you to be aware that the pharyngeal arches and the frontonasal prominence, part of the bit of the mesoderm coming over here, these form the face and head. They wrap over the nervous system and form the head. The first arch is going to make all of this upper and lower jaw of my face. The second arch is going to make a lot of the structures in the neck, and the third and fourth also make neck structures. So these arches, just like the somites, form in a rostrochordal sequence. The first arch forms first, then another one underneath it, then another one underneath it, then another one underneath it again. Each one of the arches, as they form, become progressively smaller. Each one of the arches will make completely different structures in the head and neck region. We number the arches, 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, that form in the human. And we do so because the fifth arch, if it does form, it disappears very rapidly in humans, but it does form other structures in other species. So it's a correlation with what these arches form and how we number them. And in fact, we don't actually see these five clearly because 4 and 6 fuse together very early on. So there are only 4 visible arches around the front. I didn't do that. So these arches are going to make all of the face structures. And if you look at the ventral side of the embryo, then here's the first arch here, it's shown in yellow and orange. And this is what the first arch contributes to the face. So the first arch is going to form all of these structures of the face. The portion up here is known as the frontonasal prominence, forms the cranial area. And these two coloured portions shown in green and purple here are the regions that surround the nasal epithelium where the nose will form. So we put the face together out of all of these separate parts. What I draw your attention to here is the event that occurs in the midline of this first arch. And it's the source of many abnormalities, the way in which the upper jaw forms and the palate forms. Because it forms from two separate elements and fuses in the midline, this is the source of cleft palate and cleft lip. So if there's a failure of fusion of this portion of the arch, then that's when we generate that clefting event, one of the common birth abnormalities we see. So I've mentioned in that previous image that on the surface of the embryo, we can see specialised patches of ectoderm. A patch is a placode. Because these patches contribute to the sensory system, we call these sensory placodes. And there's separate placodes for different sensory organs. There's an otic placode that contributes the middle ear. There's an optic placode, which contributes the lens of the eye. And there's a nasal placode which will contribute the nasal epithelium of the nose. They're paired and they lie initially on the surface and some of them lose their contact with the surface. These all appear in the 4th week of development, the placodes. So we've put together many of the body structures, early forms of them. It's at this time as well, in the mid-4th week, that we begin to form on the side of the embryo little paddles, wing-like structures. And you can see them here in this stage 14 embryo. This is 31 days. It's just a bud of tissue. If I cut it in half, it doesn't have any internal structures to it other than this. It's a surface ectoderm with mesoderm in the inside of it. That mesoderm is made up of the somatic and the somitic mesoderm in the limb bud region. The other thing that's in the limb bud, the developing vascular channels. So lots of blood vessels forming there. Because it's a little paddle structure, the limb is one of the most complex patterning jobs that the embryo has to do. It has to establish a pattern of different bones and tissues along its proximodistal axis. It's got to have different ventro and dorsal and superior and inferior axes as well. So it's always been a great model for embryologists to try and study how pattern formation occurs because you've got to establish 3 different axes. And a lot of experiments have been done moving limb buds around, turning them over in embryos and seeing what effect that has. So a lot of our understanding about development comes from limb buds. What I can tell you is, like the rest of the structures within the embryo, the upper limb bud forms approximately 2 days before the lower limb bud. And therefore, the events that are occurring in the upper limb precede the lower limb by this time lag continuously, always slightly ahead of it. So the upper limb forms at the vertebral segment C5 to C8, and the lower limb at L3 to L5. This also corresponds to the segmental nerves which innervate those structures. So the pattern of innervation is established in the embryo by the segmental migration into the limb bud regions and the growth of nerves at that early stage. Similarly, on the surface of the embryo, the pattern of innervation for the sensory system, the so-called dermatomes, are laid out and established while the limb buds are still limb buds. And this means that later in development, when the two limbs rotate in different directions, these ones like this and the other ones like that, then it also rotates the sensory map on the surface of the skin. The dermatomal map is rotated because it was laid down before limb rotation had occurred. In the fourth week, we can see the gastrointestinal tract as a simple tube running the length of the embryo from the buccopharyngeal to the cloacal membrane. And we can divide it into three distinct regions. We call the upper portion the foregut, the middle portion, the vast open portion of it, the midgut, and the small portion that's down near the cloacal membrane, the hindgut. This division into three portions is quite easy to see because they're quite different in appearance, but this segmentation, foregut, midgut, hindgut, is preserved in development, and we can correspondingly see the vascular supplies to these three regions come off different arteries. With the gut, what I'd like you to remember is that we get contributions from all of the germ cell layers. So endoderm forms the lining epithelium and the associated glands. Mesoderm is going to form all of the connective tissues, mesentery, blood vessels, and smooth muscle. And ectoderm, the neural crest, is going to invade it and form the enteric nervous system for peristaltic contraction. By the time we get to week 5, this is what the embryo looks like in week 5. We can see the somites now forming part of the vertebral bodies. You can see the pharyngeal arches here. You can see sensory placodes. This is the umbilical region where our blood vessels will be running out. And you can notice that the limb buds still appear as buds on the side of the embryo. Here's the ventral heart bulge. And this bulge directly underneath it is the bulge of where the liver is forming. Running down the side as a bulge in this region here is where our mesonephros lies, filling most of the body itself. But the respiratory tract forms very simply. The entire respiratory tract buds off the endoderm of the foregut ventrally, comes off here as a small outgrowth, and extends downwards. So the respiratory tract has endoderm extending downwards, and it, as it grows down, it divides into two and bifurcates to form the right and left lobes. And these early stages, we see just these buds growing into the cavities, which will be the pleural spaces. We don't need the lungs for a long time. They remain undeveloped for a long time, and they go through a sequence of developmental stages, mainly in the fetal period. All you do to generate a respiratory tree is the same thing over and over again, just as you've done to make two lung buds. And that is, as soon as the endoderm extends down as a tube, it's inhibited from growing in the midline, it makes it split into two, and then you've got two extending branches. Makes the major bronchi. It's inhibited from growing in the midline, splits into two, it forms the next branch. It grows out a little bit, it's inhibited in the midline, splits in two, and grows out again. And by doing this continuously, you generate a tree of branching that spreads out to form the entire respiratory tree. As I said, it remains relatively undeveloped through the entire embryonic period, through a lot of the fetal period, and only matures just before birth. By the time we get to week 6 in the embryo, then we begin to see a couple of other organs coming online as well. So we've got the heart, we've got the liver functioning. And the types of organs that begin to have a role to play, and you can see our face is now beginning to form. Here's the eye, nasolacrimal duct, the bit where I can cry into my nose. And the face is beginning to form up here. Notice the limb buds have now grown, and we can begin to see the primitive paddle of the hands and the paddle of the feet. They remain paddles initially, and all of the cells between the digits need to die off by programmed death to make my separate digits. At this stage in week 6, the endocrine glands of the fetus begin to function. And the endocrine function of fetal glands is required for normal embryonic and fetal growth. Without endocrine development within the fetus, we get abnormalities of development. So the pituitary begins to function a little bit later on, but it's developing in week 6. The parathyroids begin to develop, the thymus and the adrenal glands begin to develop. By week 7, our pancreas, which is formed and associated with the gut, has begun to make its hormonal secretions, very primitive ones, and these will continue to be ramped up through the fetal period. In week 7 as well, we begin to see events occurring in the regions where the bones are going to form. And all of our bones within our body form initially as cartilage. All of them except for the ones in the head, that is, in the scapula. The skeleton is made of a cartilage template. And that cartilage template is replaced by bone by a process called endochondral ossification, which basically means replacing the cartilage with bone. So here's an early knee, the upper end of the knee here, which remains, and this cartilage will be replaced by bone, which is forming in a collar at the end of the long bone here. All of this cartilage will eventually be replaced and will be left with a thin layer of cartilage on the surface of the bone. You may have heard the little disclaimer that I mentioned, that it makes all of the skeleton from cartilage, except for the head and scapula, and that's because this second process of ossification occurs in the head. And you can see it here in this fetus at 12 weeks. The cranial vaults, the plates of my skull up here that enclose the brain, are made by a process called intramembranous ossification. And that is, we don't make cartilage templates beforehand. We ossify a membrane directly, and we get this spiderwork growth of new bone forming within a membrane. Two quite distinct forms of ossification. Beginning in this late embryonic period and continuing through fetal development and postnatally, we're still replacing cartilage with bone right up through to the age of 20 when we ossify the ends of our long bones. This brings us to week 8, the end of the embryonic development. And I want to just come back to two of the systems that I should mention begin to develop in week 8. The first is this. This is a high power shot of that neural tube in the brain region. And this is the wall of the neural tube here. This is the hollow lumen of the tube. And we can see that the wall of the tube made up by these cells here called the ventricular layer, these cells are going to form our entire nervous system. But it's not there yet. And I wanted to point this out to you because we're now looking inside the head at the end of the embryonic period, and the cortex is just this thin layer of cells out here. This is the adult cortex which is going to form. It's only a small layer of cells at this stage. It's not connected up to anything else. And it hasn't even been formed correctly. It will be formed by cells in the ventricular layer migrating out and laminating the cortex. All of these cells here are stem cells for the brain. They divide and migrate, divide and migrate, and lay down the brain. All of the first cells coming out of that stem cell population make all of the neurons. The same cells from that stem cell population later in development and through the fetal period and into postnatal period form glial cells. So the two major populations of neurons and glia within the brain are all derived from the same stem cell population originally. But I'll draw your attention to this. At this time in development, this embryo here has just a thin veneer of what will be the central nervous system, which has to occur or develop mainly through the fetal period. The other major feature to note that during all of embryonic development, most of the midgut region of the gastrointestinal tract lies outside of the embryo. It's a big loop of gut hanging out the ventral surface, and only when we grow during the fetal period does the body wall engulf it and bring it back in. So this is the historic drawing that we can see here. This is the midgut looped out on the ventral body wall just above where the placenta is, and it won't be incorporated into the body until the fetal period. I just want to briefly finish up my lecture by talking about the events which need to run on and continue in the fetal period. And I really just want to highlight a couple of the key systems which need to be developed later in development from the structures I've already identified for you. I've pointed out that the nervous system is very primitive, so through the fetal period and postnatally, the nervous system continues to develop and is therefore sensitive to insult over a wider period of time because it's still developing. I've pointed out that the lungs go through a series of at least five different stages of development and only mature, forming terminal sacs, just before birth, and only mature by secreting surfactant just before birth. So a lack of, or a premature infant, has problems with the respiratory tract because it's not mature yet. I don't have much use for my genital system before I'm born. Not for a long time, not probably till I'm a lot older. In terms of development, the features that we see occurring first within my genital tract are development of the gonads. I do need those because the gonads are going to pattern development of the genital tract itself. So we do need to establish our testes and ovary pretty early on, and depending upon which structure you get will pattern genital development of the internal genital tract and external genitalia. But even in the early fetal period, externally the embryos look identical, so we pattern the external genitalia in the fetal period out of identical external structures. So at the end of the embryonic period, it remains underdeveloped and continues through the fetal period. The endocrine systems, I told you, begin to function in the embryonic period, but they really ramp up during the fetal period, and we begin to see the HPA axis that we've already talked about in terms of regulating the reproductive cycle begin to function by about 20 weeks of development and will continue to function, in particular pituitary, through the remainder of fetal development. One of the hormone systems which we do need definitely to be established in the fetus, and this is the one that I'll finish up on in today's lecture, and that is the thyroid gland. I've tried to point out some critical areas that lead to birth abnormalities. I've talked about cleft of the palate. I've talked about the respiratory system underdeveloped. The last one that I'd like to mention to you is that in terms of the environment, we know that we require the fetal thyroid to be functional, and the fetal thyroid needs a specific environmental substance, iodine, in order to make thyroid hormone. So if you live in a geographic region which is low in iodine, or your food doesn't have iodine within it, you'll be unable to make lots of thyroid hormone within the fetus, and the fetus needs fetal thyroid hormone for development of the central nervous system. Similarly, the World Health Organization, let's try that. The World Health Organization has a program worldwide now. Yeah, I begin to lose it after an hour. The World Health Organization has a program worldwide, mainly through the third world countries now, of supplementing foodstuffs with iodine. A lack of iodine in your diet leads to a lack of neural development, and this condition is known as cretinism. I finish on that with you. Well, it's the centre of the tube structure there.
The centre of the tube?
Yeah, the centre of the tube, yeah.
Okay. Sorry, thanks. Morning.
How are you? We seem to do the tag teaming, don't we?
We tag team a lot, I know. How lucky are they?
I think I've got everything.
You want me to log you out?
Yeah, if you want.